This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Turkey's official media say Turkish troops killed 21 Syrian soldiers and destroyed artillery pieces and missile launchers after two Turkish soldiers were killed Thursday. As Reuters' Matthew LaRotunda reports, the deaths come as Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and Russian President Vladimir Putin agreed to a ceasefire in Syria's Idlib region.
As part of the ceasefire agreement, Russian and Turkish troops will conduct joint patrols together in Idlib. But this isn't the first time they've done joint patrols there, nor is it the first ceasefire. Syria has gone through several ceasefires. All have collapsed. And while Putin expressed his condolences for the deaths of Turkish troops, both sides have blamed each other in the past for failure to coordinate and avert such events. Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan says his country reserves the right to respond to any attack by forces loyal to Syria's President Bashar al-Assad. In the meantime, he says Turkey and Russia will work together to supply humanitarian aid. The civilian toll has been profound. The United Nations believes the fighting in Idlib has sparked what may be the worst humanitarian disaster of the nine-year war.
That is Reuters' Matthew LaRotunda reporting. Another Democratic presidential candidate, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, has bowed out. AP correspondent Shelley Adler.
I am suspending my campaign for president.
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, who was then asked, who will you endorse?
Let's take a deep breath and spend a little time on that. We don't have to decide that this minute.
Warren never finished higher than third in the first four states and was routed on Super Tuesday. She failed to win any of the 14 states voting and finished third in Massachusetts behind Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. Shelley Adler, Washington.
And this is VOA News. Countries around the world continue to take increasingly stringent measures to combat the spread of the coronavirus that has infected at least 95,000 people in more than 75 countries. Palestinian authorities announced a 30-day state of emergency and closed the city of Bethlehem and the Church of the Nativity just weeks ahead of the busy Easter holiday. Japan said visitors from China and South Korea face a two-week quarantine and would be barred from public transportation, a move which South Korea rejected. The World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says countries need to be prepared for the impact of the virus.
This is not the time to give up. This is not a time for excuses. This is a time for pulling out all the stops.
Australia on Friday ordered its first school closure after a 16-year-old in Sydney tested positive for the virus. Mainland China has at least 140 new confirmed cases of coronavirus on Thursday. The country's National Health Commission said on Friday that is up from 139 cases a day earlier. In the United States, the virus has spread across 17 states with more than 200 people infected and 12 deaths. The U.S. Senate voted 96-1 to approve an $8.3 billion emergency fund to fight the virus. President Trump is expected to sign that bill Friday, which passed the House 415-2. The worst outbreak of the coronavirus in the United States is at the Life Care Center in Kirkland, Washington, near Seattle. The AP's Ed Donahue reports it's now under federal investigation.
Pat Herrick got a call from the nursing home. Her mother had died from the coronavirus.
She wasn't sick. She'd been really well. As far as we knew, she wasn't sick. So I was surprised.
Herrick doesn't blame the nursing home.
I think that it's a larger issue with CDC. It's a larger issue with Mike Pence. It's a larger issue to take this seriously. And it's concerning now. How are we going to get these people out of here?
Kevin Conley's father-in-law is at the nursing home.
The CDC needs to change their approach to this. We've been promised tests. It's a day later and we're still no tests. I don't know how long it takes to get tests here. I still don't see a large CDC presence.
Conley wants Vice President Mike Pence to see what is going on with quarantines at the Life Center, and they want someone there trained in infectious disease control. I'm Ed Donahue.
You can find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Friday, March 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara says he will not seek a third term.
I am not sure that it is a good news or a bad news. It is just the respect of our constitution. And for us in GPS, when for Guillaume Soro, this announcement doesn't affect the action in progress.
Habib Sonogo is the spokesperson for Ivory Coast opposition GPS party of Guillaume Soro. A UN official hopes formation of South Sudan's new government would help ease suffering. Kenya's economy has been hit by coronavirus despite no confirmed infections. And lawmakers from Zambia's main opposition UPND say they plan to file impeachment motion against the Speaker of Parliament.
The Speaker overstepped his powers, and therefore, according to our constitution and our standing orders in Parliament, when a Speaker misconducts himself or breaches the constitution, he can be impeached.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesperson for Zambia's main opposition UPND party, and Nigerian women living with disabilities seek equal justice. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's post, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesperson for Ivory Coast Opposition Generations and People in Solidarity, the GPS party, says Guillaume Soro will be the party's presidential candidate in the upcoming October general election. Habib Sonogo says President Alassane Ouattara's announcement yesterday that he will not run for a third term has no effect on the party's plans for the October poll. Soro, a former rebel leader and former president of the Ivorian National Assembly, is accused of allegedly plotting to overthrow the Ivorian government. GPS party spokesperson Habib Sonogo says Ivory Coast constitution prevents the president from seeking a third term.
For us, this is not new. Alassane Ouattara just decided to respect the constitution. Unfortunately, as usual, he creates script atmosphere, you know. For us, Ouattara didn't decide not to run again. He simply could not by the respect of our constitution.
Does that mean this is good news for the people of Ivory Coast?
I am not sure that it is a good news or a bad news. It is just the respect of our laws. It is just the respect of our constitution. And for us in GPS and for Guillaume Soro, this announcement doesn't affect the action in progress. Actually, we just really compete against Alassane Ouattara if the constitution permit authorized him to present, but it was not the case. Today, we assist to a non-event for us. It is not the news. Now, we are just waiting for the RHDP candidate for the next election.
Does that mean that Guillaume Soro will not be a candidate for the upcoming election?
He will. Till today, our goal is to make all we can do to push the government to respect the law and the constitution. And in our opinion, and we prepare ourselves to push also the candidature of Guillaume Soro to the next election. He will be candidate.
Some people are suggesting that the decision by President Ouattara not to seek additional terms could actually pave the way for Guillaume Soro to make a significant impact or possibly win the election. Is this how your party sees it?
No. For us, whatever the candidate we will compete with against Guillaume Soro, it is not important. What is important for us is just first, actually, to release all the prisoners who are in the jail in Ivory Coast, and also to permit to Guillaume Soro to come back Ivory Coast. And third, he will just propose to all the Ivorians his project, his society project, to all the Ivorians in October, if the RHDP wants, because for now, we are not sure that the RHDP wants to go to election in October.
If Guillaume Soro cannot go back to Ivory Coast because of some of the problems that he is encountering, how then is he going to be a presidential candidate to compete in the upcoming elections?
Okay, Peter, let me tell you. For us, right now, he will return. We don't imagine that this is not the case. You know, he will return in Ivory Coast and he will compete for the presidential election.
Habib Sonogo is the spokesperson for Ivory Coast opposition GPS party. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Abidjan. Humanitarian workers say they hope the formation of a national unity government in South Sudan under a peace deal last month will ease suffering in the country. However, those expectations are tempered by reports of continuing violence. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Alain Nuthu has been UN humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan since September 2017. He says there have been some significant changes for the better in the country since then. He tells VOA that when he arrived, most places were inaccessible to humanitarian workers who were unable to bring aid to people in desperate need. Over the past year and a half, he says the environment has been changing for the better as fighting has been reduced and aid workers can now reach most places that were previously out of bounds. He says having a government in place should create more stability and over time improve conditions for the people.
The fact that they have all the actors who are outside now inside the government, and the debate happening there will be between South Sudanese and South Sudanese about how do they govern the places and where they want to go with it. And this is what brings us some hope, because at least we're not in a situation where people are sitting apart and instead just going and fight on the ground or pointing fingers.
Nuthu says the coming weeks will tell if the government is formed with all the members and ministries in place. If this comes to fruition, he says it will give the government a good basis upon which to rehabilitate its shattered society. But the task will be gargantuan. The United Nations reports more than 1.7 million people are internally displaced, and more than 2.2 million are refugees in neighboring countries. And there are still pockets of instability. The aid group Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders, this week reported the intensifying conflict in Jonglei State of South Sudan has sent thousands of people fleeing. Among those killed in the latest violence were two aid workers with the British charity Tear Fund, who were shot to death when gunmen ambushed their vehicle on Monday. Along with the violence, food shortages continue to plague the country. The United Nations is appealing for $1.5 billion to provide life-saving assistance for 5.6 million people. UN officials say they need money to help more than 1 million acutely malnourished children and to provide health care, water and sanitation and protection of women. Nuthu says having a stable government in place will allow aid agencies to work on development projects with the aim of building a more resilient society. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A prominent Sudanese lawmaker is praising the partnership between the military and civilians in the transitional government in Khartoum. The leader of the Umar National Party hailed the two sides for working together despite a number of challenges, including economic reforms and achieving transitional justice. Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Sudanese Umma National Party leader Asadiq Al-Mahdi says not much has been changed economically during the first 5 months of the transitional government, but it is important that civilian and military leaders are working together. Al-Mahdi says undoing the wrongs of the previous administration under the ousted President Omar al-Bashir is not an easy task.
The legacy of the outgoing regime is so great in its negative aspects that it is very difficult to deal with. The fact that there are several war fronts, the fact that there is a collapse in the economy, the fact that Sudan actually is isolated internationally.
Al-Mahdi encourages the military and civilian leaders to continue working closely together to achieve the revolution's theme of freedom, peace, and justice, and praise government for forming a committee to dismantle Bashir's government and what he calls related illegal institutions.
They set up companies which were favored in terms of customs, in terms of taxes and so on. This again has to be dismantled. Again, what they had was many NGOs, which were NGOs in the apparently, but in reality they were partisan in their relationship with the ruling party.
Last weekend, the committee fired more than 100 ambassadors and diplomats from the Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, saying they were illegally appointed to their positions. Al-Mahdi says the government should do more on achieving justice for all, but praised the government for agreeing to present Bashir and other officials to the ICC.
During his reign of office, resisted this. However, now there is no point in doubting that he is called by the ICC, indicted by the ICC, and that his regime has committed the atrocities.
The Umma Party leader says Sudanese revolutionaries will continue to be vigilant on their demand for reform, but denies his party has called for an early election. For VOA News, I am Michael Atid in Khartoum.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, March 6. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. Lawmakers from Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development, UPND, say they plan to file an impeachment motion against Speaker of Parliament, Dr. Patrick Matibini, for allegedly violating the Constitution. The Zambian Constitutional Court had ruled that the Speaker exceeded his powers when he declared a constituency seat vacant after its Member of Parliament, Tshishimba Kambwile, had joined the opposition. UPND spokesperson Charles Kakoma says the Speaker must step down or be impeached.
We are organizing our Members of Parliament to move a motion of impeachment of the Speaker of the National Assembly, Tshishimba Kambwile. Chimkambwi used to be a member of parliament from the Kwa Belt province of Zambia, and the speaker decided to declare his seat vacant, which resulted in a by-election. And the Constitutional Court has ruled that the speaker overstepped his powers, and therefore, according to our constitution and our standing orders in parliament, when a speaker misconducts himself or breaches the constitution, he can be impeached.
When do you plan on moving this motion, and how practical is it, since it appears that the PF has a majority in the National Assembly or Parliament?
No date has been set yet. The process might take some days to have that motion tabled in Parliament. In our view, still a success story if we manage to move that motion of impeachment rather than allowing a breach of the Constitution to go unchallenged.
But Charles, this is what some PS supporters are saying, that this is yet another political gimmick being played by the UPND just to score cheap political points instead of helping entrench democracy in Zambia.
Yes, by moving this motion of impeachment, we are helping to entrench democracy. We are saying that there is no one who is above the law. If the speaker breaches the constitution, he can be impeached. If the president breaches the constitution, he can be impeached. And therefore, no one should think that he can violate the constitution and get away scot-free.
How would this help in addressing some of these challenges that you talked about in parliament?
What is wrong is that you must not allow a situation where the speaker makes biased rulings, which in this case, even against the constitution. The speaker must never be allowed to do that. And therefore, by moving this motion, we are sending a message, we are sending a signal that we do never allow the speaker to have biased rulings. Rulings that have no basis at all. Rulings that are just meant to appease the ruling party.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesperson for Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development. He is speaking with viewers Peter Clotty. Kenya is feeling the economic effects of the coronavirus despite having no infections, as imports from China fall because of travel bans for people and goods. Airlines are incurring losses, and small traders in Kenya say they fear their stocks will soon run out, putting them out of business. Ruud Elmadol reports from Nairobi.
There is little activity these days at the container terminal in the Kenyan port of Mombasa. The coronavirus outbreak has brought shipments from China to a halt. Kenya's small traders depend on manufactured goods from China that are normally unloaded at this port. Samuel Karonja heads the 50,000-member Importers and Small Traders Association of Kenya.
We are going to see a hike of the prices of some commodities two or three times than what we are paying for. because the reason why we go to China is because of the costing. The costing there, the value for our money. So you can have several goods without compromising the quality, but at very good rates. You are not going to find it anywhere else in the world.
Karanja says consumer goods such as electronics, clothing and cosmetics are the first to feel the pinch. While Kenyan traders scramble for other suppliers, the coronavirus keeps spreading and having an impact. Winnie Carthoni, owner of a small cosmetics shop in Nairobi, is counting the last lipstick tubes from China she still has for sale.
We maybe in about 2 months or so, we will basically cross down.
It's a similar situation at the Nairobi electronics store. Abu Bakr Karim, a father of three, says his stock of Chinese-made phones is almost sold out.
If the virus goes on the way it is now, people are going to be affected. Well, also my family and other families.
Karim's shop is among the thousands of small businesses that authorities say provide more than 80% of Kenya's employment. Yet, the coronavirus outbreak has created a boom for one business in Kenya, shops selling face masks. Stephen Bugwa manages the Nairobi safety shop.
In the last 2 weeks, we have dispatched hundreds of thousands. The most common demanded one is the 3-ply. This 3-ply is the one that almost everyone is looking for.
Since even these face masks are made in China, they too will run out. Meanwhile, Kenya's Ministry of Health is preparing for a coronavirus outbreak, says Ministry official Rashid Aman.
We have a very active emergency operations center under our Department of Disease Surveillance and Response that responds to any suspected cases or alerts that we are informed about and quickly moves forward to address these alerts.
As Kenya prepares for a possible outbreak, the country's traders can only hope that the virus is contained soon so that imports from China can resume and they can get back to business as usual. Ruth Elmendorp for VOA News, Nairobi.
Nearly half the people in Nigeria are women, and about 20% of them live with a disability, according to research by a Nigerian advocacy group. Activists say many of those women suffer injustices because of their conditions, including gender-based violence. But one disabled woman is pushing back to ensure women like her have better access to health care and equal justice. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Eberendu Onyinyechi was barely a year old when she was struck with an illness that paralyzed both her legs. Undeterred by her condition, she got an education, earned a linguistic degree, and now works for the Abuja government. But like many of Nigeria's disabled women, Eberendu says she has been subjected to sexual violence.
Many times when some of us are in a relationship, these guys tend to take advantage of us. You know, I think sex, it's supposed to be something I consent to. You don't force me to do it. You don't try to use the strength of a man to try to take it. But unfortunately, that's what many of us suffer.
Women and girls with disabilities in Nigeria are three times more prone and vulnerable to gender-based violence than their able-bodied counterparts, according to a non-profit activist group. Violence by intimate partners is the most common case. They also find it harder to seek justice because of stigma and bias due to their condition, says Irene Patrick, who has the non-profit Disability Rights Advocacy Center.
They are not believed.
Patrick's Abuja-based group, known as DRAC, is helping women and girls with disabilities get better access to justice. She says the situation is serious in Nigeria.
Nobody believes that, oh, as a person, as a woman with a disability, you were raped, because of the societal notion that women with disabilities are not sexually attractive. So nobody can actually desire them enough to rape them. So we found that this is preventing them from getting access to justice, because not only do they not want to report anymore, even when they report, nothing is done about it, and in some cases they are actually ridiculed.
Nigeria signed its Disability Rights Act into law about 1 year ago, but activists argue that ignorance, lack of access, and poverty continue to hamper progress of access to justice for Nigeria's disabled women. Until matters improve for women with disabilities, organizations like DRAC say the will provide a safe place for them to fight for equal justice. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sport with news from the world of athletics, where Morocco and Nigeria were on Thursday added to the list of countries at the highest doping risk by the Athletics Integrity Unit, less than 5 months from the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. Countries worldwide are classified by the AIU in three categories, A, B, and C, according to the level of doping risk to the sport, with category A having the highest doping risk to the sport and category C the lowest. Morocco and Nigeria joined Bahrain, Belarus, Ethiopia, Kenya and Ukraine as having category A status. The AIU, the independent anti-doping watchdog for track and field, said that in 2019 the Nigerian Athletics Federation failed to report on compliance as a category B country. Staying with athletics, the logo for the World Athletics Under-20 Championships Nairobi 2020 has been unveiled at a ceremony in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, on Thursday. The design celebrates the people of Kenya and the nation and represents uniting the world through athletics, bringing everyone together in Nairobi, known as the Green City in the Sun. Amina Mohamed, Kenya's Cabinet Secretary for Sports, who unveiled the logo, said Kenya is on course to host a well-organized championship.
The operational and logistical plans are well on course, and work to ensure all necessary arrangements will be in place and on schedule for a successful Under-20 championship is ongoing.
Athletics Kenya President Jackson Tuwei said Kenya is ready to host more athletics event, noting that Nairobi will kick off the World Athletics Continental Tour Gold Meeting Series on the 2nd of May, 2.5 months before the World Athletics Under-20 Championship Nairobi 2020.
For the first leg of the Continental Tour, which is coming up on the 2nd of May, and we are happy that we are the only hosting country in Africa among the 10 other hosting countries of the world. And this is going to be a precursor for us as we prepare for the World Under-20 in July.
And now to football news. The return legs of the Toto CAF Champions League 2019-2020 quarterfinals will take place this weekend. Last weekend, all the four first leg games witnessed home side winning with a 2-goal margin, a result that keeps doors open when the reverse fixtures are played on Friday and Saturday this weekend. Holders Esperance were the only side to manage an away goal in their 3-1 defeat to Zamalek in Cairo, while the other three games ended 2-0 victories for hosts Al Ahly against Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa, Raja Casablanca against TP Mazembe of the DR Congo, Wydad Athletic Club against Etoile du Sahel, respectively. Aggregate winners this weekend will reach the semi-finals scheduled for next May, with the holy grail of African club football at stake. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And briefly, before we leave you, summary of Africa News. A spokesperson for Ivory Coast Opposition Generations and People in Solidarity Party says Gion Saro will be the party's presidential candidate in the upcoming October election. And that is it for this Friday, March 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports, or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to Ndombolo and Makossa to Kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.